Welcome to How Do I Get Your Job, a podcast by the UW Daily. This is a podcast where we're going to be conversing with professionals about their jobs and, you guessed it, how they got them. I'm Kate Connors.
And I'm Simon Blue. Today we're talking to Dr. Third Andreessen. Dr. Andreessen is a part-time faculty at the University of Washington, currently affiliated with the Comparative History of Ideas Department and the American Ethnic Studies Department.
He also teaches at Green River College and is the principal investigator for the 206 Hip Hop Archive in Seattle.
Elm Coffee Roasters, open in Pioneer Square and SLE for takeout, and soon indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com.
First, thank you so much for being here. And to start us off, we're going to have you introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about who you are, where you're from, and what work you're doing right now.
I'm Third Andreessen from Seattle, Washington, Central District. My folks moved to the Central District in the 1930s from the Philippines when the Philippines was a United States territory. Now, I've just been in the CD South End for all my life. And yeah, ran the streets of the Central District and in the South Side of Seattle.
So do you want to tell us a bit more about like your journey to where you are now? So how did you get here from that background?
A lot of this is kind of like, you know, I'm just bumping into people. To be even in the field of education, you have to have some kind of passion for education. The way the passion manifested to me is when I hated school. I never really wanted to go to school. You know, I'm one of those people, fuck school. And I think one of the reasons why I was disenchanted with the public school system was, especially like in social studies class or history class, you know, you really, really never learn about, you know, your community. You just feel kind of out of place. And I thought it was just exclusively my feelings until I realized that it was also my friends' feelings. We had, you know, conversations about, you know, why we're not learning things at school. Even though we're learning things from home, it doesn't reflect what's being taught in school. And, you know, seeing school as a more authoritative figure, it kind of almost like devalue what we learn at home, because, you know, how we see school as this, you know, like an institution. I just started asking questions about, you know, why are we learning about, you know, our communities? And the more we talk about it, the more the teachers saw us as, you know, seen that as or interpreted it as we're just acting out. You know, we're just really disruptive, where we're really just trying to ask questions. So at times, you know, we would get kicked out of class. And the more you get kicked out of class, the more you say, fuck school. You know, I mean, I'm trying to learn and I'm getting kicked out, you know, and that kind of, you know, turned into some kind of disenchantment and wasn't really focused. We're really just trying to be, you know, kids and, you know, teenagers and things like that, really just trying to survive school. You know, didn't really intend to go to college and whatnot, because if college is going to be like high school, why even continue? And, you know, I was getting harped on by my parents, and you got to do something, either get a real job or, you know, go to school, and I have to do something. And, you know, there's a couple of times, you know, I kind of tried out, you know, after graduation, you know, tried out a couple of courses, you know, at a local college, and, you know, kind of trying to get a feel for it before I even dive into like really applying myself. And there was this one book in history class, this one professor gave it to me, is about like Filipino American history, which our high school teachers, middle school teachers really never covered. And once I saw that, it's like, boom, it just like opened up the floodgates. It's like, oh man, I've been waiting for this. And, you know, one of my friends happened to be one of the counselors at this college. And you know, we ran into each other because I ain't seen this dude for a minute. And we went to the same school, and he said, yeah, man, you know, there's going to be some applications going on. Why don't you just, you know, go apply? So I was like, all right, you know, I'll do it. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking nothing of it. And then next thing you know, I got this one big envelope from UW, you know, admissions. And we're like, oh, shit, I actually got in. Oh, damn. Okay, now this is a sign right here. you know, so I better take advantage of it. And then, you know, got in and stuff, and still trying to find myself in this PWI of an institution. And I think one of my counselor, Ms. June Harrison, you know, I don't even know if she suggested it, but she just like assigned me a class. Here's a class. And one of them was like ethnic studies. And I kind of really didn't understand what ethnic studies was. Like, okay, you know, maybe, you know, I'll give this a shot and whatnot. And, you know, took a class and just got mind blown by it. They even argued with a professor, be like, you know, talking about Filipinos. And, you know, this was like, man, Filipinos aren't Asian, you know, all, you know, on that tip, right? At first, people don't know what the hell I'm talking about, in what context I'm not making my argument. And, you know, I mean, that professor didn't really like how I just came at her. But, you know, I built a good relationship with this professor. You know, I didn't have the best grades. You know, I probably had like a 2.0 or something in that class. However, I was invited to peer facilitate. And this was already kind of after, you know, I did my union summer. You know, it's kind of like equivalent to Freedom Summer in the 1960s, where folks would knock on doors and encourage people to vote. Well, Union Summer is kind of like, you know, we would knock on doors who works from, you know, in a corporation that's not unionized, and encourage people to get unionized. And out of that, I was in Time Magazine in 1996. And, you know, that's like when my community organizing started. Once I saw myself in Time Magazine, I was like, oh, shit, this is it. Okay, now going back to that story, because that's kind of connected, right after my internship in LA, doing that union organizing, this professor reached out to me. And, you know, again, I bump into her crossing down Schmitz Hall, and, you know, invited me, you know, to see if, you know, if I'm interested to becoming a peer facilitator, you know, that class that I took that, you know, I didn't get a good grade. And I said, all right, you know, I need to boost my GPA anyways. And, you know, hopefully this would, you know, raise my GPA. And sure enough, first day of class, I was, you know, tasked to kind of lead, you know, facilitation and whatnot. And I just saw it as a performance. Because, you know, I'm also like a spoken word artist, you know, we tour down, you know, up and down the West Coast, you know, doing spoken word, open mic thing from Seattle all the way down to San Diego. And once I presented myself in front of the class, I just like, you know, boom, just fell in love with the, you know, with the teaching aspect of it. It's like, oh, man, it's like, what just happened, you know? And it's like an adrenaline rush that you don't really get from, like, you know, performance, you know, like if you're like a spoken word artist or an artist, but this is like some type of like, you know, critical, you know, from an intellectual academic type of level, type of like, oh, damn, I can't believe, you know, I just did that. And, you know, kept doing that, you know, just kept doing it, peer facilitating classes and whatnot. And so when I graduated, you know, as an undergrad in American Ethnic Studies, I applied for this para education, basically a teacher assistant at a public school, you know, and that's where I kind of started building my resume. I didn't even know that I was building my resume at that time, you know, and I didn't realize that, like, you know, I'm also gaining experience, you know, like high school level teaching experience, because, you know, I just coming out of, like, you know, that college setting, and then from high school, next thing you know, started getting all these, you know, volunteer or internship at an elementary school level, teaching like chess, you know, little after school stuff and things like that. So I kind of have that, you know, that skill set as well. So I was able to kind of use that to apply for AmeriCorps, which is also in the education, in the field of education, as a program coordinator, which I would bring like elders, you know, like BIPOC elders, and for like assemblies and stuff at a West Seattle school. So kind of seeing that, you know, as role model and things like that. So it's part of that's also organizing events, you know, and I really never left the field of education or the classroom. And I really thought coming in, you know, I was the shit and whatnot. I can do whatever I want to do. I can do whatever. And then I got into the master's program in teaching, and like, yeah, I was still TAing. So yeah, I'm the badass right now, you know, the rock star right now. That's how I was feeling until somebody said, oh yeah, there's a gig here at this college, right? Once you, you know, apply for it. And they told me like a week before the quarter started. So I was kind of, you know, I was scrambling. And that's like when I realized that I wasn't a shit at all in teaching. You know, it's like a baptism by fire. I was like stumbling left and right. You know, the support system I had as a peer facilitator, as a TA, weren't there. I was the only one really teaching the classroom, you know, in the classroom. And I was about to quit, you know, in one quarter. It's like, oh man, I can't do this. I thought this is going to be where I'm at. And I was kind of hesitating to, you know, teach again in the following quarter in the winter, that I kind of, you know, have to make some type of redemption, you know? So that winter class was kind of almost like a step towards that redemption that I really thought that, you know, I was like this badass, you know, educator or, you know, teacher. A lot of this is, you know, I haven't really acknowledged or seen, you know, male privilege, you know, toxic masculinity, because that's the environment I grew up in. And at that time, I didn't have any kind of understanding of it. So I came into teaching, you know, from, you know, that patriarchal, you know, lens that cost me, you know, and I have to kind of, you know, rebuild from that. And to this day, you know, I'm still rebuilding it, but I really thought that that wasn't it, but the classroom kept calling me. You know, there was one point in time that I stopped teaching like for 2-3 years, and then they called again. And within that, you know, that whole experience, you know, I was able to kind of be, you know, be humble about it. And that's when I started really, or other folks aren't inviting me to like apply for, you know, teaching gig and things like that. It's really hard in academia. It doesn't mean like after you graduate, you're going to get, you know, a tenure position. If you're white, yeah, you'll probably get it right away. But if you're a person of color, you know, a Black or Indigenous professor or, you know, PhD, you know, you're probably going to be working, you know, extra long, extra hard than, you know, the other white candidates. You know, but, you know, the field of education kept calling me. I think in 2017, applied for this one position at Green River College, and I really thought I was not going to get it because, you know, it's everything. If you get that PhD, there's really no guarantee that you're going to get a job right away. Because a lot of people are getting PhDs, and you know, it's also just you're getting diluted in some kind of sense. And they hired me at Green River College, and now I'm the department chair over there. And it used to be called American Minority and Ethnic Studies. You know what I'm doing right now during, you know, this tenure that I have is I'm gonna delete or revise the name of the department and drop the word minority. So just be American Ethnic Studies, because minority, especially today in this era, is a problematic type of description. In the 80s, that might work, but you know, it's 2021. You know, this is LeBron James type of basketball. You know, it's not Dr. J anymore. It's not Magic anymore. So that's one of the things that I kind of started doing, and implementing classes, you know, that centers Black, Indigenous, and other students of color, so that they'll be, you know, successful in what the things that they do if they learn about themselves. And I think this is one of the reasons why I'm in education, because I never learn about myself. I never learn about my community. I never learn about my friends' community, you know, since I was, you know, empowered by, you know, the mentors that I have. You know, to me, I can't pay them back. There's really no way to pay them back. I'm paying it forward, you know, within the things that I've been, you know, been working on. I was able to create, you know, different classes that centers, you know, intersectionality, that centers, you know, Black, Indigenous, and other people of color narrative experiences, and scholarly articles. It's rare that I assign white authors. You know, I always make it a point it's going to be BIPOC authors, really trying to like really decolonize a lot of things that I learned from an institution. And hopefully that, you know, I'll be able to make some kind of dent towards dismantling the system of white supremacy, patriarchy, homicist, normative, disability oppression, poverty, capitalism, so on and so forth. You know, I'm not really here to change the world, but if I could ignite the brains that could change the world, then, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm contributing to that. I don't have to win awards. You know, I don't have to be recognized. Matter of fact, I don't like that. I don't like awards. You know, I don't like medals because I feel like those are tools to control you, to make you feel good, you know, performatively, that you're actually getting acknowledged. I mean, who's acknowledging you? The system? Why? You know, I thought we're supposed to dismantle the system. So why is the system acknowledging me for dismantling it? So to me, it's suspect. That's why I don't subscribe to it. So yeah, that's how I got into education, because I hated school.
Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At our roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee and experience that you will look forward to every day. The cafes in Pioneer Square and SLU are open now for takeout, and soon, dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order.
All right, honestly, like, perfect, right? Like, that's kind of how a lot of change happens in the world, is by folks that are, like, you know, not really complacent with the current state of things. And I guess for other students who may feel inspired by that background, by your story, and who may also want to, I guess, make that dent in the similar field that you are, right, academia, do you have any advice for those students, right, especially those who may not feel super represented by the current state of academia?
I think this is something that folks will, you know, learn along the way. If you're, you know, if your heart is in, you know, in that field, if your heart is in education, I mean, don't let academia be like the end all and, you know, to fulfill your goal. In academia, it's just like any other corporations out there. A lot of people, you know, don't have the idea of what academia looks like, other than, you know, it's scholarly. There's a lot of books, you know, it's quiet, it's safe. But if you cross that, you know, that railroad tracks between you being a student and being an employee of a university, it's the same feeling as if you're working at Nordstrom, because I worked at Nordstrom before. I feel the same corporate type of feeling that I never experienced as a student. Feels like Safeway, you know, working for Safeway. It feels like working for UPS. It feels like working for a fucking amusement park, exploited. And, you know, those are the things that the jobs that I had before I became, you know, where I'm at. And I could, you know, there is like a, you know, similarities, you know, between academia and other corporations. So I would say, you know, trust the process. And I'm saying this in context. When I say that, you know, just look at the other Black, Indigenous, and other professors of color before you and what they have to go through, you know, because I'm going through the same thing. And, you know, I've been told, you know, but I didn't listen, and, you know, but I'm still here. And so this is what you really, really want, you know, make sure, you know, be careful what you wish for. Again, I'm not saying that, you know, this is not it. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, tools that I could use to really open gates for the communities, you know, open gates for the folks that's been marginalized by the system. I mean, these are the things that why I'm still kind of sticking in this field, even though it's very exploitative. It's downright white supremacist, misogynist, homophobic, transphobic. There are, you know, just things that I'm able to use in order to address these issues, and at the same time, you know, make a little bit of a change. You know, I can't say all the change, but, you know, some kind of change. If that's where your heart is at, you know, follow your heart, man, and you're now, man, your gut. You'll eventually find what you love. You know, when you find what you love, you ain't never gonna have a job in your life. You know, this job is 24/7. You know, especially if you're running a damn study abroad program, it's definitely 24/7, but it don't feel like it because, you know, I love what I'm doing. And, you know, time becomes a social construction if you love what you're doing. You know, I mean, you put in a lot of time, but the what you're really like, you know, what's keeping you going is your passion. I mean, there are times that I didn't get paid doing this. You know, a lot of this, you know, I was a volunteer teacher first before I even got paid, you know, and I feel like I'm still not getting paid the way, we're all of us supposed to be getting paid. Expect to put in a lot of time, you know, a lot of tears, a lot of energy. But when you love what you're doing, none of that matters, you know, because this is what you want to do. You know, if you're about serving the people, you know, serve the people in the ways that you can, feed the people in ways that you can. And if academia is going to be your field, surround yourself with mentors that survived this whole process. Surround yourself with positive folks that support you. You know, eventually you're going to need haters. Sometimes you need them in your life, you know, to just, you know, keep you checking, whatnot. But, you know, don't let that get in the way of, you know, what you want to do. And just, you know, just be true to yourself. You know? Put in time. You know, it's a matter of time. A lot of people think that academia, you know, is just, you know, a romantic place. You know, this Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade type of like, I mean, you get to do that in some ways, but at the end of the day, you know, academia is a corporation. It's a plantation, if you ask me. That's why it's called field. What's your major? I'm in the field of anthropology. It's a fucking plantation. That's just my interpretation of it as a person of color. So I could be wrong. Other than that, I mean, you know, you're going to learn along the way. You know, you're going to probably see, you know, your mentors get picked apart, and the mentors that you have sometimes is not who they are. And, you know, sometimes you might experience that along the way. Don't let all these tenured professors steal your shit, because they will steal your shit. You know, as undergrads, protect your shit, man, because, you know, your work can get stolen. You know, I've seen it. You being an undergrad does not mean within this whole hierarchy does not mean you're, you know, inferior. Matter of fact, you know, some of these folks' tenure depends on your work. So never, you know, just be reminded that, you know, you also have your part of the whole rigor in academia. If it wasn't for undergrads, there won't be no academia. If it wasn't for undergrads, there won't be no ethnic studies. You know, there will be no Office of the Minority Affairs. That shit wasn't given to us. We got to fight for that. So know your power. Know your power. Know it. Understand it. And if you get to understand it, you're going to be an airbender. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be a waterbender. You're going to bend all those things. So know your worth.
Thank you so much. This has been great. Are there any like different courses or projects or RSOs that you'd want to recommend to people who are listening to this podcast who'd like to get more involved?
Yeah, I want to plug the 206 Hip Hop Archive at Suzalo Library. The library reached out to me a couple years back because, you know, they kind of lack all these, you know, hip hop songs, you know, Seattle based. And I think they had like about 40 songs, and half of that shit was fucking Macklemore. And, you know, being in Seattle, third generation Seattle, you know, I just can't let that happen, because, you know, I'm also part of the hip hop community in Seattle. And as having somebody with a PhD, they see me as a gatekeeper, right? And it's my responsibility as part of the hip hop community to make sure that Seattle is represented. So I took on the task, and I ended up adding about 2,000 more songs in the archive, and it's still growing. A lot of that is, you know, pioneers of Seattle hip hop, the folks whose Macklemore is standing on, and just want to make sure that, you know, their legacy and their contributions in Seattle, you know, hip hop culture and in the world, you know, is acknowledged. And, you know, we started to conduct oral interviews. You know, these artists started to collect flyers, music videos, anything that has to do with Seattle hip hop and perhaps Pacific Northwest. You know, we're doing that, and it's growing, and arguably has become to be the fourth largest hip hop archive in the nation in context of, you know, academia after Harvard, Cornell, and University of Houston. So I want to plug that. This is for the town. This is for the 206. And, you know, in order for this, you know, to continue to happen, if you're interested in an independent study and research, you know, a 499 class, and if you're interested in just collecting nothing but Seattle hip hop, that's what, whether it be DJing, B-boy, B-girl, graffiti, MCing, music video, lectures and whatnot, hit me up. I got some work for you. And at the same time, you're also going to be part of this historic project, in Seattle. Put your name up in there in the archive, as appreciation. And at the same time, $4.99, that's the GPA booster to a lot of people. Hit me up if you're interested. So yeah, that's the plug that I have right now. And I'm also teaching a 360 class, a AES 360 Filipino American history in the fall. And we're also working on a curriculum that hopefully Ethnic Studies or Seattle Public School would, buy, so that we'll have Ethnic Studies in Seattle Public School. So those are the things I want to plug. And shout out to the PD, to the Central District, Southside, Westside, BIPOCs worldwide.
Yeah, I just really want to say thank you so much for coming here and talking to us today. Thank you so much for doing all your amazing work. And we really appreciate your time.
We do hear that you have a mean spoken word. If you want to close us out with any of that, feel free.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is a spoken word that I wrote. This is during perhaps like after 9/11 and whatnot, like in 2001. Things like that. And a lot of these things are going to kind of reflect of all the classes that I've been taking or I've been teaching. This is also going to reflect, what's going on in our society. And this is about, the exploitations and things that I see and how, we're being, really been, for the lack of a better word, being manipulated by the bigger system. That make us like fight each other and at the same time hate ourselves. So, this is things that I've seen, especially when also, when I was also in the military. And this is, here we go. Back from the battlefield intelligence report, practice battle drills just to cut their life support. Purple haze and relayed because they trying to infiltrate. It's been a debate, Arizona police state. Video camps on street lamps from Seattle to New York. They listen when you talk and watch how you walk. Public school is a joke. They try to keep a slop. Push dope in my hood just to neutralize my blocks. Teachers ranking students, miscalculation of our skills. They planning from K to college, we be working in them fields. War on drug, got me bugged. Trying to get this thriller stack. How the fuck can we win? George Bush pushing crack. My identity is Jack. My history started with Magellan. Ways to tell the children and suppress rebellion. Cause there ain't no telling what's the next revolution. Our verbal 187 can topple institution. 1,000 years of civilization became non-existent. I'm a product of colonization. We became very distant. Reality's a fallacy dating back centuries. They manifest a destiny in the Pearl of Orient Seas. Island of Thieves, Puerto Rico and Cuba, Saipan, Samoa, and the state of Aloha exploit our labor, pass laws against us, stolen land. We make it wealthy and the system still unjust. For centuries and such, World Trade Organization. A massive operation to make this earth a plantation, deforestation and human exploitation, third world nation, we vacation, is facing annihilation. So what you gotta say then? Unplug the microchips, we've been trained to be deranged. It's all a magic trick, they prescription make us sick, remedy they don't incite. Public enemy told me, just don't believe the hype. So BIPOC unite, minorities unite, but 99 unite, choose our mind as a weapon, gather all the information, let's win in clandestine, class back in session, Deuce 6 and Jackson, Central District is in the building. I got a lot of those, but those are, you know, the ones that I can remember right now.
Dr. Andreessen, thank you so much for all of your time and for that. So yeah, thank you everyone for listening to this episode of How Do I Get Your Job? And be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on social media at Soundbite and at The Daily on all platforms.